We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
We're talking today on Keeping the Faith with Gordon Stewart from Minnesota. He's a frequent commentator on Minnesota Public Radio, and he's had commentaries on All Things Considered and all sorts of good places. Today we're going to be talking about the Bible and the news. In other words, religion and politics, the two forbidden subjects. Welcome, Gordon. Can you hear me all right?
I can, Steve. So great. Good to be with you.
Great. And I might explain to listeners that Gordon has some hearing difficulty, and so he's on a special phone with an amplifier and all that. But there may be some unintended humor in today's program as I ask a question and he answers another one. I mean, that may happen, right, Gordon?
Well, it's very possible. Yes, it is.
All right. Well, I've enjoyed hearing and reading Gordon Stewart's commentaries on Minnesota Public Radio. I might mention that I've asked him to read a couple of those here on our program today to give listeners in Illinois and Indiana, and of course our online listeners everywhere, a taste of what people in Minnesota get to enjoy regularly or be provoked by. Because, Gordon, some of your commentaries are quite pointed.
Well, thank you. I hope so. I don't know how to characterize them. I guess the best way is just to decide for yourself what they are. But they all arise out of my just observing what's going on both inside of me and all around me in the world. And so they come out of that. And they really are. It's hard to describe, I guess, in a sentence or two, but I like to think of them as at the intersection of faith and public life, that kind of thing.
Now, Reverend Stewart is a pastor. He's pastor of Shepherd of the Hill Church in Chaska, Minnesota. So he's speaking as a person of faith himself, as a Christian pastor, Protestant pastor. But I've noticed that in his commentaries, he speaks quite broadly, representing people of many different faith traditions. Why don't we let our listeners hear an example? Gordon, I know I asked you to pull together two or three that you might share with us. What one would you like to begin with?
Well, I think, there's a fellow that's on death row right now in Georgia.
Yes.
Named Troy Davis, and a number of us have signed a petition asking for the board in Georgia to stay his execution. Seven of the nine witnesses against him in the trial that convicted him have recanted their testimony, and so I went through some of the pieces that have aired on All Things Considered, and I found one that was about another man on death row, Tookie Williams. You may remember that case. And it aired on Minnesota Public Radio's All Things Considered on December 20, 2005. And here's the way it reads. This was after Tookie Williams' execution. Now that the debate leading to the execution of Stanley Tookie Williams is over, it's time for a postmortem on the debate itself. Stanley Williams' attorneys argued for clemency on the grounds that their client was a changed man. Tookie's books educating children about the folly of gang life were evidence, they argued, of Stanley's redemption. The state argued that there was no redemption without confession of guilt for the four murders for which he had been sentenced to death. The governor, in the end, agreed with the state. Tookie was not redeemed. Tookie must die. When and why did redemption enter our discussion about the morality of the death penalty? And when did final judgments about who is redeemed and who is not become a matter for human judgment? Last I knew, redemption was a theological word, not a legal or political word, but wrapping our arguments in theological language at some point seems to have become the coin of the realm. By arguing over the state of Tookie Williams' soul, we implicitly stake a claim for the state of our own souls and selves. We are redeemed. Tookie is not. We send Tookie on to God. We all get to stay here. We are the only Western democracy that still practices the death penalty. The nation that was to be a city set on a hill, a beacon of light for the world, has become a city that worships its own powers of death, declaring itself unique for its light, while using torture and death as the instruments of light and redemption. The argument leading to Stanley Williams' execution by lethal injection was the wrong argument from the very beginning. It should never have been about whether or not Stanley was a redeemed man who had earned the right to live. It should have been about us and what it does to us to strap him to a table where some stranger would stick the needle into his vein as a representative of the redeemed. My religious tradition also ties together religion and politics. Its central figure was executed by a Roman governor because he dared to challenge the ultimate authority of religion and the state. How ironic that any of his followers would salute the governor's orders instead of echoing the wrenching cry from the old instrument of torture and execution. Father, forgive them. For they know not what they do. That's the piece.
We've heard a commentary that had been previously aired on Minnesota, All Things Considered, by the Reverend Gordon Stewart. Let me remind listeners that this is a live call-in show, and we're eager to have people respond to what they hear here, their thoughts about comments made by our guests. You may do that if you're in the Champaign-Urbana area by punching in your phone 333-9455, or if it's long distance, there's a toll-free number you may use, 1-800-222-9455. So if it's long distance, perhaps you're listening online or where we're broadcast away from the 217 area code for the phones, punch in 1-800-222-9455. And, of course, if you missed part of this program or are unable to hear all of it today, you may go on our website and hear any of our programs as they are archived there, and that is at will.illinois.edu/keepinthefaith. And we're informal, so there's no G in keeping, just keeping the faith. will.illinois.edu/keepinthefaith. Well, Gordon, what kind of responses do you get to your commentaries? I know as a pastor, when you preach a sermon, you may be able to see people's face, their reactions, their body language. They may say something as they leave the sanctuary. But when you do something over the radio, it's just sort of out there. Do you ever hear what people think?
Not very often. it is, as you say, you just throw it out and you see what comes back, if anything. Sometimes people will go to the trouble to go to the church website and they'll send me a message by email. Sometimes we've had people show up and on Sunday morning and worship because they heard one of them. But generally speaking, you know, aside from my my wife telling me they're terrific, there's not much. You don't get much response. You just keep throwing it out there. There is other venues, however, such as we have something called MinPost here, which is a news source, and started by former editors of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, and they post pieces that I write, and I've gotten as many as 40 comments in response to one of them.
So that would be like a blog, and people can read it and just make a comment immediately.
That's right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, maybe you'll get some callers today who will tell you what they think one way or the other about some positions you've taken on these issues. Now, we advertised this program as dealing with religion and politics. I called it sort of the Bible in the news. You know what I'm referring to when I talk about the Bible and the newspaper, because Karl Barth, a famous Swiss theologian from the previous century, said that that's what pastors should do when they preach. They should have the Bible in one hand, the newspaper in the other. These days we have all kinds of ways of getting news. So I tried to broaden it. But is that what you think you're doing? Bringing biblical principles, theological principles to bear on the events of the day?
Yes. I think that's... I went to the same, I was taught by the same tutor, and I think that is the job. That's the job. The job of faith is not independent of politics. Politics derives from the word polis, people, the people. Faith is about the people, the kingdom of God. What Jesus was preaching was the kingdom of God. It was the reshaping of the world in a way that would fill the world with the love and wisdom of God. So it's not some other world that we're talking about. It's this world that we're talking about. So yes, it is exactly. And sometimes, you know, I find myself these days so upset by what I read and what I hear, I watched these debates recently, and it's hard for me. I have very low blood pressure. I'm almost not functional in my blood pressure. It's very low. It's like 100 over 62 or something like that. But I find my blood pressure rising to at least 105 over 70. I can't keep silent about it, but I need to find ways to express what I see. Whether I see correctly or not, I have to put it out there as to what I see, what I think I see, and help other people to think about it as well.
How does Minnesota Public Radio, though, get away with having a religious commentator? Because although the fairness doctrine that governed radio and TV for decades, for almost a century, is now gone, it's been removed from the law. So now there are many stations that just have one political viewpoint, but those are private stations, so they can hire a Rush Limbaugh or somebody usually from the right wing to just rant on for hours, and they don't have to provide any any way for people to respond who have different opinions. They don't have to have anybody else talk. But public radio, because we're funded by the public, either through the government or by private donations, we have to be more even-handed. We have to be fairer. How can they get away with having a Protestant Christian minister as one of their commentators?
Well, I don't know, Steve. I think the number of the commentaries that I submit are not accepted. In fact, an increasing number are not accepted.
Oh, good. Let's hear one of those.
Well, I could do that, but I can do one with you maybe a little bit later that we talked about earlier on the economy, on the economics, but that will not air on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm going to use that, submit that to a different venue. But I think in answer to your question, I think the ones that have been accepted and the reason that they can use them is that they leave it to the reader to draw his or her own conclusions. In other words, they're not in your face, and they don't necessarily take a political point of view. If I could give you an example. The one that did receive a huge response immediately, with phone calls to the church and people coming to visit following it on Sunday morning, was one that aired in October of 2006. Remember the massacre at the Amish school in Pennsylvania?
Well, of course, yeah.
And everybody was just aghast by what had happened, and had watched or heard the story. And this piece aired right after that. This is the piece. "I am not Amish. I really like my car. I like the internet. I have an insurance policy. I like electricity. But I have an Amish rocking chair. I bought the Amish rocker from Jacob Miller, an Amish craftsman in Millersburg, Ohio. We sat on his front porch and rocked a while, paid him $30 for the rocker made of maple and hickory by Jacob's own hands. That was 30 years ago. In times like this, I still sit and rock. I think about Jacob and the Amish, but mostly I'm thinking about the rest of us. In the aftermath of the school massacre in Pennsylvania, the camera shots of Amish horse-drawn buggies came into our living rooms. While those camera shots drew us closer to the strange world of Amish simplicity, those same camera shots were an invasion of Amish values. The Amish do not use cameras and do not allow themselves to be photographed. To do so, according to Amish values, would be to engage in vanity and pride, the opposites of humility and community. In none of the camera shots did you see an Amish person interviewed on film. Rooted in the radical wing of the 16th century Protestant Reformation, the Amish live by their own norms. They're a peaceful community. They shun the culture of individualism, war, and greed on the basis of the teachings of Jesus, which they take at face value. You have heard that it was said, 'You shall love your neighbor and hate your enemies,' but I say to you, love your enemy and pray for those who persecute you. They also believe that truth sets us free, and that the end never justifies the means. As I sit in Jacob's rocking chair, I long for Amish truthfulness in an election campaign where untruth, distortion, and misrepresentation assassinate the character of one's opponents. winning is everything. Truth is lying by the roadside on the road to Washington. The Amish values of honesty, unvarnished truth, and when honesty and truth are violated, confession and forgiveness, are like a warm light in the dark night of the soul and nation. It was this society of simple truth and nonviolence that bore such surprising witness to the power of forgiveness as the long line of horses clip-clopped past the home of the man who had killed their children in a one-room schoolhouse. They nodded their heads to the family members who had come outside, and filled with grief because of what their son, their husband, their father had done. They had invited the widow of the killer to join them at the private funeral. And days later, when the man who had killed their children also was buried, their horses clip-clopped the buggies of 75 of them to his funeral in support of that grieving family. In times like these, I sometimes turn off the television and rock a while in Jacob Miller's Amish rocking chair. I sit back and give thanks for a more peaceful, humbler, and more honest way to be human. So I think that, does that help to answer your question, Steve, in terms of how they can air it?
Well, it certainly does. And what we've just heard for listeners who may have tuned in late is a commentary that was on Minneapolis Public Radio written and spoken by the author, Reverend Gordon Stewart. This one was called The Amish Rocker. Gordon is pastor of Shepherd of the Hill Church in Chaska, Minnesota. We're talking with him by phone from there today. But listeners may call and make comments, ask questions of our guest. We're eager to have that happen. 333-9455 is the number in the Champaign-Urbana listening area. That's 333-WILL. If it's a long-distance call, 800-222-9455. That'll put you in touch with our engineer, Kyle Croa, and she'll get you in line to talk with our guest by phone. We do ask when you call to turn down your radio or take your earphones out of your computer because there is a 7-second delay that we have, but we're happy to get you on the phone, and it's very easy to talk to our guest today, Gordon Stewart. Gordon, when you first began this, how did you get involved? Did you write something and call them up or send it to them, or how did that happen?
I wrote a piece on Thanksgiving in 2005. And I don't even have the piece anymore. I lost it. But I wrote this piece, and I've listened to Minnesota Public Radio, All Things Considered. And somebody had told me, you know, you should submit something and be on All Things Considered. So I just went to their website, and I, you know, there's a thing on there where you submit a commentary, and that's what I did. And 24 hours, I had a request to come in and record. So it was recorded on Thanksgiving Day, 2005. That's how I started, and I thought, boy, you know, you just don't think. Most of us don't think that the radio or television is going to be interested in what we have to say. Why would we think that? I gave it a shot, and it worked, and then they wanted more, and I just kept writing. I mean, I write all the time. I write every day. So,
are you paid for this, or is it a volunteer activity?
They pay about $3 a common time. I think, what is it, $50, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gordon, we have a caller who has a comment or question on line number one from Urbana. This is Keeping the Faith. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Listening to your commentary about the death penalty and those things, thinking back when I was in the 1960s, when I was a teenager, the church that I was involved in was heavily into ecumenism and interfaith understanding. My sense is there isn't a whole lot of that kind of meaningful conversation going on anymore, at least that I hear about among pastors and rabbis and theologians and so on, with regard to the meaning, you know, of what's in the Bible, questioning, you know, questions of faith and so on, working it all out. Is that accurate? Is it all kind of frozen in little compartments with people clinging to their own ideas and not really sharing much, or is there more going on than I'm thinking there is?
Well, thank you. That's a wonderful question, and I'm glad you asked it. I'm not sure how to answer it. I think in one sense, I think there's much less. You know, the ecumenical movement that you were part of, where people were were talking across the lines, were basically in the 60s and in the 70s, the lines were Protestant and Catholic, for instance. So those kind of home discussions that took place back then are not happening anymore. Part of the reason for that is that so many people who took part in that, it did bear fruit, because it's almost to the point now where the lines are almost indistinguishable between Presbyterians and Methodists and Congregationalists and Baptists and so forth. On the liberal side, or on what we used to call the mainstream side, but now the split is down the middle of the Christian community between the religious right and the rest of us. This is my own take on it. And the religious right, I'll give you an example. We do something at Shepherd of the Hill called Dialogues, First Tuesday Dialogues. And we had an imam come and speak. We had a pastor, a Christian pastor, a Jewish rabbi, and an imam come and speak after the three of them had visited Israel and Palestine together. And the theme of the discussion was religion, balm, B-A-L-M, as there is a balm, a healing ointment in Gilead, or bomb, as in the atomic bomb. So we had the imam come and speak. And one of the people who came to the dialogue, who attended and heard the imam, was so taken by what the imam had to say, and never heard an imam speak before, that she was at a Bible study in another church. And in the Bible study, when she shared this with them, a group that had been very warm and very friendly up until that point became very cold and said, you shouldn't be listening to an imam. You should be converting him.
Hmm.
So that's what I'm saying, is that there's a huge split here. And in the religious community generally, in Islam and in Christianity, there are hardliners who don't want to cross over to have any conversation, don't want to do any listening. And there are those who are hungry and thirsty for that kind of mutual understanding, expressing and saying what we believe and listening to what others believe at the same time.
Thank you.
Appreciate your call. Thank you very much. We have another call waiting, Gordon, this time on line number four, which is our toll-free line. Caller from Eureka, Illinois. Go right ahead.
Yes, I certainly enjoyed your commentary on the Amish. My question is, how good a job do you think that mainstream religion, our mainstream media, does in covering the Christian faith and other faiths?
Gordon, before you answer that good question, let me remind you there are certain words you cannot say over the radio.
Thank you very much, Steve. I appreciate that, that reminder. Oh, boy. I'm not a media basher. I don't think it's helpful to bash the media. I don't do that. Having said that, however, the kind of religion that is represented mostly, as I see it, even in places like CNN, tend to be the more extreme and the sensation. It's like everything else. I mean, the media are driven by advertising. Advertising is driven by sensation. Whatever will pique the interest or the anger or the whatever, the emotion, the reaction of listeners and watchers is what gets aired. And so the more bizarre, you know, this fellow down in Texas, or in Florida rather, who was going to burn the Quran 2 years ago, got enormous play in the media. What didn't get equal play, or anywhere near equal play, was those of us who think that was a total misrepresentation or misunderstanding, horrifying, twisting of the gospel of Jesus. So when I was a boy, those who were represented in the public media on television, for instance, and back then there were three television networks, ABC, NBC, and CBS. We were all watching the same thing. And the people who were represented there in the discussions about religion and the kind of stories that were aired were stories about the way it was for most people in America in religion. There were religious leaders who were articulate, who were thoughtful, who were not sensationalist. And I don't see that. I don't see that anymore. I rarely see somebody as a spokesperson chosen by a television station or radio station being one of the people that represents that kind of sanity and thoughtful approach. So I hope that's an answer to your question.
If I may just have one more comment, please. I think about the best job that I see is Religious News and Ethics Weekly on PBS. I think they do a marvelous job of covering the full spectrum of religious news. Thank you very much, sir.
I could not agree more. Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Religious and news, religion and news. I'm blanking on the exact title, but it's heard on our sister station here in Illinois, in Indiana, WILL-TV, Religion and Ethics in the News. We're about halfway through our Keeping the Faith program this afternoon with Gordon Stewart from Chaska, Minnesota, a frequent commentator on Minnesota Public Radio. And he's been heard there on All Things Considered. He's pastor of Shepherd of the Hill Church in Chaska. We'll be getting back to him in just a moment. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. Although next week, Don Nolan will be our guest host, and he'll be talking with Kerry Nelson, who is the current president of the AAUP, the American Association of University Professors, a national organization. And he'll be talking about the fierce humanities. Professor Nelson is a professor here at the University of Illinois, and he has some strong opinions about how the humanities should be taught, and he'll be discussing those and giving listeners a chance to talk with him about that next Sunday, that's September 25th, here on Keeping the Faith. You're listening to WILL AM 580, program is heard simultaneously at 90.9 FM HD3, if you have one of those wonderful HD radios. And also, it can be heard live on online at will.illinois.edu/AM. And these programs are archived there. You can go to that same site and find the programs under Keeping the Faith. On October 2nd, our guest will be the author Tess Hilmo, H-I-L-M-O, the author of a very interesting new book called With a Name Like Love. It's a novel dealing with a interesting religious family. We'll be talking with that author on October 2nd. October 9th, our guests will be Reverend Bob Rasmus and Dr. Elizabeth Buckley talking about the Lutheran Social Services in Illinois, that'll be October 9. October 16, our topic is a biblical perspective on immigration. On October 23rd, we'll be talking about the problems of cluster bombs around the world. Those are some of the topics ahead on Keeping the Faith. Support for this program has been provided for many years by the University YMCA here at the University of Illinois, where Friday forums have started up this fall on the topic, The Future of Learning, Is Public Education Under Siege? I was able to hear the first of those programs last Friday, a very excellent lecture on the difficulty of women in the science, technology, math curriculums. The next program at the Friday Forum, next Friday noon at the Y here in Champaign-Urbana, will be September 23rd, The Future of Online Education. Scott Johnson will be the speaker. He's the coordinator of the Illinois Online Network. That's Friday Forum at the University YMCA. It's on the corner of Wright and Chalmers Street. And those are free lectures at noon. If you'd like a lunch, you may call the Y, 337-1500, and reserve a lunch, or just show up. They'll probably find one for you anyway from the Y Eatery there, good Thai food. Or you can bring your own lunch or simply go to the free lecture. Again, noon, September 23rd, The Future of Online Education at the University Y. And then on September 30 there, that series, Ralph Martiri from Chicago will be speaking on improving equity in school funding, a major problem throughout the country and particularly here in Illinois. He is the executive director of the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability. Ralph Martiri, September 30, speaking at the Wise Friday Forum on improving equity in school funding. Before I get back to our guest today, Gordon Stewart, let me say just a word of thanks and goodbye to Jay Pierce. Jay has been a fixture here at WILL for a long time, and he was around when this program began 12 years ago and has been very supportive when he was station manager here and then when he was in his new position over both television and radio in terms of the created content. Programs like Keeping the Faith and Media Matters and Focus, and that's just on AM radio. But he's moving to a new position in the Quad Cities, and we will miss Jay Pierce a great deal. Many people associate his voice with this station, and for good reason. He's been a strong and creative presence here for many years. So we thank you, Jay, and wish you well in the Quad Cities in your new position and at the radio station there. Also a National Public Radio affiliate. But back to our guest today. We're talking with Gordon Stewart and about the Bible and the news, religion and politics. Gordon, do you have another commentary that you have written that you would share with us?
I do. I have a couple of them. Since it's the Bible and politics, I just looked. I have this one that wasn't aired on the radio. It was published October 9, 2009, and it's called Revelation at the Dairy Queen, and it goes like this. I've just come from a great annual physical. I'm rejoicing in a low blood pressure. I'm almost comatose. And the loss of a whole pound. I go into the Dairy Queen for a cheese chili dog. I know I'm not supposed to. Fast food, fake cheese, a hot dog, chili and all that. But I do. One little cheese chili dog won't kill me. I'm alone. I place my order. Two chili dogs, and go to a booth. The only thing to read is some kind of a poor excuse for a newspaper called Tidbits. It's mostly ads. A gun and knife show. Another gun and knife show. Want an income, not just a paycheck? Call this number to find out. No risk to you or to your family. Junkers wanted, cash paid for most. Clearly, folks are hurting. Then I see a little ad tucked in among the others. The seventh day is the Sabbath. Exodus 28 through 11. The beast thinks to change it. There are biblical references to the book of Daniel and the book of Revelations. Avoid the mark of the beast. Live eternally. Post office box, Bear Creek, Alabama. And I'm more than a little P.O. box, I should say. P.O. box, Bear Creek, Alabama. And I'm more than a little P.O.'d. Nothing gets my dander up more than the misuse of Hebrew and Christian scripture. Whoever placed this ad knows how to scare people to death, but they don't know the scriptures. Anyone who's studied scripture knows that there is no book called Revelations in the Bible. There is the book of Revelation, singular, but there is no book of Revelations. If you haven't spent enough time with the book to get the title right, I think, and then it strikes me that when fears take over, we don't spend time to get it right, and it's no coincidence that the ad to avoid the mark of the beast, to live eternally, is right there in the middle of the other appeals to the pervasive fear and insecurity of our time. Gun and knife shows, get an income instead of a paycheck with no risk to you or your family. Junkers want it, cash paid for most. Oh, there's another ad inviting me to an open house at the Pain and Brain Healing Clinic. I think to myself, I should write the people in Bear Creek at the post office and invite them. But now I'm suddenly ashamed of myself for being a smart aleck, an elitist looking down my nose at those who don't know that the name of the biblical book they claim to represent is Revelation, and I'm supposed to be a pastor. Who am I to judge, I ask, in a rare moment of Christian charity and humility, feeling guilty and condemning myself for an elitist pride. First shall be last, and the last shall be first. Before removing the speck from your neighbor's eye, take the log out of your own. I need to be kinder, more loving, more understanding, not judgmental. I read the one ad one more time, and all that guilt and Christian charity fly out the window as suddenly as they came in. Why shouldn't I be upset when ignorance thinks it's knowledge, when stupidity parades as wisdom, when spiritual terrorism dresses itself up as an invitation to eternal life? Not only does whoever placed this ad I'm reading not know the name of the book they purport to know, they have not a clue that the beast in the book of Daniel was Antiochus IV Epiphanes of the Seleucid dynasty, whose conquering, occupying armed forces sought to destroy the religion and the culture of its Jewish inhabitants, or that in the book of Revelation, it was Caesar and the Roman Empire at the end of the first century CE. The helmets of the Roman 10th Fratensis, the legion that occupied Jerusalem after the Roman-Jewish War in 70 CE, bore on their helmets, their shields, and their barracks the image of a wild boar, a symbol of humiliation to a conquered people. The beasts in Daniel and in Revelation were different, and yet they are the same. In neither case was the author reading tarot cards or making 21st century predictions from a fortune teller's crystal ball. I want to place an ad in Tidbits to let people at the Dairy Queen know that the beast in biblical times and in ours is also the same. It's the beast of nationalist imperial ambition, the beast of colonial occupation, the subjugation of one people by another, the beast of war, of conquering armies, the beast of empire. The way of faith, as Daniel and the author of Revelation understood it, is to live differently. We turn our backs on that beastly way of living and participate in the way of eternal life. I think I'll go back to the doctors, or maybe to the pain and brain healing clinic, to retake my blood pressure. Then maybe when I calm down, I'll send a kindly letter to the P.O. Box in Alabama with a copy of Glenn Beck, suggesting they get the name of the book right before they tell others what it says. In the meantime, I'll ask for forgiveness for being a snob and for guidance to who knows, guidance to know when, if ever, to let nincompoops ruin a two-cheese chili dog celebration.
We've just heard a commentary by Gordon Stewart, who is a regular commentator for Minnesota Public Radio. Gordon, when you were reading one of your commentaries earlier about the Amish rocker and talking about, it's the same theme that comes up here again in terms of humility, which the Amish are good at and the rest of us are not so good at. When you talked about the vanity and pride that the Amish see as happening even if they just get their photograph taken, I was thinking of all the photographs of me I've put on Facebook.
Well, they're pretty good, Steve. I mean.
So as you were feeling guilty about sitting in the Dairy Queen having that reaction, I was having that reaction as you read your piece about the Amish. We have a very vibrant Amish community near Champaign-Urbana, near the town of Arthur, Illinois. And they're wonderful people, and I've been fortunate to be able to meet some over the years. Let me give the phone numbers again for callers who have a response to our guests' words and ideas. 333-9455 is a number in Champaign-Urbana and that listening area. Elsewhere, 1-800-222-9455. And we do have another caller waiting on line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith with Gordon Stewart.
Thank you. Regarding politics and the Bible, I wonder, do you have any comments on the political references to Israel and both ancient Israel and modern Israel? Are they related at all?
In my opinion, they are not. The book of Revelation, and as I read it, for instance, which is the major, the last book in the Christian canon, the book of Revelation or the Apocalypse of John, is used often by people to say that events that are happening today with Israel and the world and other nations was predicted by that book. At least in my view, and I think most of the biblical scholars agree, that's a complete misreading of the type of literature that the book of Revelation is. And that when the book of Revelation, for instance, goes back and looks, talks about the beasts and the bear with the, you know, the, all of those, it's referring to past empires. It's not, its intent is not to look forward and to do a crystal ball prediction or to say anything about modern Israel. There's the modern Israel is as far from their thinking as it could be, except that insofar as the understanding of Israel is that Israel is chosen in the call of Abraham. It is the Abrahamic community that is called to be a light to the Gentiles, to the rest of us. So that light will not be extinguished, according to my faith, and I think the faith of the Christian faith. But it really has nothing to do with Israel as a nation, I believe.
We just heard on the Sunday All Things Considered, in the hour before Keeping the Faith came on, former President Jimmy Carter talking about the Palestinian resolution to the United Nations to be recognized as a national entity in the United Nations. Do you have any comments on that?
Well, I just don't think there's any conceivable way for there to be justice in the Middle East for anyone until there is reconciliation and until there is an independent state of Palestine. And Jimmy Carter has worked very hard. He's taken it on the chin a number of times for standing up for the Palestinians. I think it's a very delicate matter because you don't have to scratch very deeply in the Christian psyche to before you scratch an anti-Semitic streak that is very, very deep. And the old way of saying it was that the Jews crucified Jesus. The Jews didn't crucify Jesus. The Romans did. But that anti-Jewish streak is there, and so we have to be extremely careful, I believe, in advocating for the rights of the Palestinians for self-determination and in criticizing Israel for the way in which it has expanded its territory and subjected its Palestinian neighbors. We have to be very careful how we do this. My thought, I'm totally in favor of an independent Palestinian state. I just don't think, to me, it's a no-brainer.
We have another caller waiting on line number 4, our toll-free line. This is a caller from your state, from Minnesota, must be listening online. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Well, also from the same city, Mr. Stewart, this is Chuck Lieber.
Oh, hi, Chuck.
And we haven't really talked about the Palestinian situation, but I totally agree with you that there's not going to be peace in that part of the country until the Palestinians do have their own country. But I don't think it's going to happen in our lifetime, unfortunately.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it is the diciest problem at the heart of the issue of terrorism at this point. And if that issue were solved, the problems that we now have between the West and the radical elements of Islam would certainly be lessened. They would not go away because the underlying matter of Western imperialism and the encroachment on natural resources of the Middle East and of Asia itself, that's not going to stop. But it would go a far piece down the road, and I think every administration that has been in power has understood that. They just have not known what to do or have been fearful of taking an action which would make it worse.
And I agree with you. I agree with you. The one comment that I wanted to make, and then I'll hang up, is when I came to Shepherd of the Hill and met Gordon, I was a relatively staunch conservative. And although I still consider myself conservative, a lot of my views have changed as a result of Gordon's what I consider clear thinking and connecting the Bible and Jesus' teachings, putting them in today's context. So I want to thank you very much.
Well, thank you for that,
Chuck. I hope other people in Minnesota are hearing. Just come on down to Shepherd of the Hill.
Okay. I'll hang up now. Thanks very much.
Appreciate the call. And other callers are welcome with compliments or antagonism. That's fine. We're happy to have arguments on this show. We just need to ask you to keep your comments relatively brief. We're down to our last couple minutes. But again, 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. So we're down just a couple minutes. Gordon, we don't have time for another one of your whole commentaries, but tell us what you're thinking about. What are you planning to write next?
Well, what I've been thinking about most lately is this matter of economics. I've read there's something called an Investor's Business Daily, and several weeks back it reported that Tiffany's profits had increased by 56% during the second quarter.
Tiffany's the jeweler and so forth.
Yes. Now, that's not bad, you know, 56%. While the rest of us are holding our breath and people are looking for work, increasing numbers of Americans have been looking to food stamps, somebody's shopping at Tiffany's. What I've been working on is a piece that will, in hopes that it will bring us back to the original discussion of economy and economics. I think the root of the word economy is a Greek word oikos. House, an economy, an economos, an economy is a household, and how you do economics is how you manage the household. We all live in a single household, but as I look at what's happening in the society, increasingly, you know, we've had this discussion, Warren Buffett talking about increasing the tax rates on the wealthy, wonderful group called Wealth for the Common Good doing the same. But it's not just a matter of tax rates. Something is structurally terribly wrong with this way of managing the household in which we all live.
Gordon, I'm afraid we're going to have to stop there. We are down to our last just 30 seconds, and I do need to thank you for being on the program. We've been talking with Reverend Gordon Stewart from Chaska, Minnesota, frequent commentator on Minnesota Public Radio and pastor of Shepherd of the Hill Church in Chaska. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for Keeping the Faith. Next week I'll be traveling, and our program will feature Carrie Nelson, current president of the American Association of University Professors, with guest host Don Dolan. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
The signal power of AM 580 will be further reduced this week, conditions permitting, and the next phase of our tower repair will begin. You may be unable to hear AM 580 for as long as 2 weeks. The program service on FM 90.9 will not be affected, and you can hear AM 580 online at WILL.illinois.edu. We apologize for this inconvenience and thank you for your patience as we work to bring you a much improved AM 580 signal. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Risk Management Commodities, Lafayette, Indiana; Milo's in Urbana and Escobar's in Champaign; and Unitarian Universalist Church of Urbana-Champaign. These business partners join the Friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3.